A koutou greetings everyone, and a special welcome to Ngā Hauewha, the Four Winds, or those of you who Sophia listed, who joining us from overseas. Thank you to Sophia for the introduction, and to all of you for joining this webinar. And given Sir Geoffrey Perrin's military experience, it's particularly his First World War service, delivering this webinar on the eve of Armistice Day has extra significance. I wish to acknowledge and thank up front those that have made this webinar possible and assisted me with my research. There is no book on Sir Geoffrey Perrin and limited information available, but all of those listed here have helped me considerably, and I thank them all and acknowledge them for that. I want to examine SGP, as I'll call him often, SGP or Sir Geoffrey's life, not so much from the farmer, soldier, scholar perspective of his life covered in the obituary, which you can see on your screen now, but more about how each successive phase of his life, inclusive of three wars, were interconnected. His obituary, Tiara, in the Dictionary of Biography of New Zealand have some information. He left some notes about his early life, and they are held at the Massey University Archives, and they've also have correspondence and minute files related to his time as principal. Also a few photographs and documents left to Massey by his descendants. I don't know, I'll say up front, much about his private or personal life or family life, or even much about his life after retirement. So I'll focus on the areas that I know about. So the scope will be, as shown on the screen, a very little bit of background, and then the three focus areas, being a student and his involvement in the First World War, Massey in the Second World War, and then as the Regional Commissioner for Civil Defence in the Cold War, and then talk a little bit about his legacy. SGP was born in Streatham, now part of Greater London in the UK. Despite it being part of Greater London now, it was semi-rural then, and from an early part of his life, young Geoffrey was interested in nature, animals, plants. He recalled cycling out into the countryside and exploring, as he described it. He was interested in birds, animals, and he collected moths and butterflies, so almost a proto-scientist as a young fella. He attended prep school only, so he didn't have what we would consider today a secondary or a grammar education. I think for a while he thought that might hold him back. But at the tender age of 14, he departed for Canada. He had two choices, either going into the Merchant Navy, which his family couldn't afford, but or going farming. So he elected to go farming. And through a contact of his father's in London, he was put in touch with a British person who had emigrated to Canada onto a farm. And yes, that person would be delighted to take young Master Perrin on if he was prepared to do chores in exchange for board. He then worked on a series of farms in Canada, which I will cover briefly shortly, for the impact of this period had on him before he attended the Ontario Agricultural University at Guelph in 1911. One aspect of his life before he departed for Canada, he notes in his early life, he started reading and that he'd read all of R.M. Ballantyne's novels. Ballantyne wrote a series of books based on his experiences with the Hudson Bay Company in Canada. His heroes are depicted as self-reliant and morally upright. James Fenimore Cooper's novel, The Last of the Mohicans, was also a particular favourite of SGP's. The Canada period of SGP's life was largely undertaken in the area west of New York State, across the border in Canada, the scene of the Ballantyne and Cooper novels, Guelph, west of one wonders if the idea of going to Canada and the concepts of survival and self-reliance from the Cooper and Ballantyne novels influenced the decision he made to travel to that country. The stage of SGP's life was significant, for it was his first-hand experience of farming and war. His earliest farming experience was on the east coast of Canada in the area between Lakes Huron, Erie and Ontario, where, as I mentioned earlier, the scenes for Ballantyne and Cooper's novels were set. Wolf, which is shown on your screen there, is the west of Toronto, is the site of the Ontario Agricultural College, although he was probably unaware of that institution at the time he was a young farmhand. Young Geoffrey Perrin worked on several farms before taking up tertiary study in 1911. The first of these was on Stokes Farm. This was a small farm. Stokes grew buckwheat for grinding into flour and ran a few yearlings. Geoffrey had to do odd jobs, but it was not fulfilling work, and by his own admission, he had got tired of my rather valueless training at the Stokes. So he opted to move on. He needed to earn money as well, as he'd already decided he would like to buy a farm eventually. His second farming experience was on an apple orchard where he operated machinery to peel and dry apples. Dried fruit was in great demand, and winter fruit on farms and on the prairies construction camps where apples could not grow. Again, basic wages, lack of proper training, as he put it, caused him to move on in less than a year. So at some, you know, at a very early age, he's valuing not just being on a farm, but actually the opportunity to learn, or when he doesn't learn anything, he moves on. The Somerville farm, however, was a significant experience for SGP. Not only did the farm have berries, plums, peaches and grapes, it had milk cows, chickens, cattle and breeding sows. Besides working with all of those on this mixed farm and learning a lot from Somerville over the 2 years he remained there, the longest he ever spent in one place, on a farm in Canada, he also learned how to handle horses and became an expert in driving 2 and 3 horse wagons, ploughing and harrowing. And even this would impact on his military life, as you'll learn in a little while. In addition, Mr. Somerville subscribed to the monthly Greens Fruit Grower magazine. Perrin would read the magazine from cover to cover and cut out any articles that interested him, assembling quite a collection. He recalled from this period, it was his first serious attempt at technical education. At the same time, he'd have to make soap and butter, kill pigs and salt meat for preserving, so quite practical. In 1910, on a whim, he decided to go west to British Columbia, where he had 2 second cousins. After a false start, he took a job at Okanagan, a fruit growing area. The Coldstream Ranch consisted of several self-contained apartments: fruit growing, hops, arable crops, poultry and cattle ranching. Hired as a teamster, so he was running a team of horses and a cart, or ploughing, he learned a lot in the year he remained there, covering all seasons and a range of agricultural aspects, and also more about the handling and care of working horses. Pridham's was a well-established cherry farm and apple orchard. As well as running a 2-horse team, he was involved in spraying, cultivating and picking. Finally, he moved on to the Kelowna Land and Orchards Company Ranch. This still involved work with horses, but also included exposure to irrigation work on a grand scale. And while working there, a friend suggested Geoffrey apply for a bursary to attend the Ontario Agricultural College at Guelph in British Columbia. He did and was successful. So in early September 1911, he reversed course back to British Columbia, where his Canadian adventure had begun. The Ontario School of Agriculture and Experimental Farm opened on the 1st of May in 1874 as a direct outcome of Ontario farmers' demand for more information about better farming methods, something SGP would eventually experience in New Zealand, and this became somewhat of a call to action for him. In 1880, the school's name changed to the Ontario Agricultural College, or OAC, and that's how Geoffrey Perrin referred to it. On arrival at OAC, or Guelph, in 2011, SGP found he was in a class of 180 first years, the class of 1915, which was the year they would graduate from their four-year Bachelor of Science in Agriculture course. He worked hard in his first year, even coming top of class in poultry. But more significantly, he held his own against the other students, including the several English classmates who all had, apart from him, attended public school in the UK. In his first summer break, he and a couple of other students worked on an orchard in the Niagara Falls district, cultivating, spraying, thinning, and picking fruit. At the end of his second year, he and a friend decided to work on a farm where they would clear and develop an apple orchard with a view to buying it off the farmer. However, his friend's UK family did not come through with the promised finance, so they both returned to OAC for their third and fourth years. It was at this time Perrin had a further significant work and life experience. In the long summer vacation between the third and fourth years, he worked as a general hand at the nearby horticultural experimental station at Vineland and was able to observe firsthand the workings of an experimental institution. Vineland had only been established in 1906. The land, 90 acres or 36 hectares, was gifted, but part of the attraction was that the property contained a great variation in soil types, including clay, sand, and gravel. Moreover, the Department of Agriculture wanted to centralize the 15 different fruit experimentation stations located elsewhere. This would enable more advanced experimentation to be undertaken than was possible on the grower-owned plots. The aim, with a single government-funded centre, was to get away from the heavy focus on variety testing undertaken hitherto towards controlled investigations of current agricultural and horticultural problems, pollination, soil management, pruning, propagation, pest control, breeding of new varieties suitable to local conditions, among a range of other areas. And I look at Vineland and sort of see Massey there a bit. But it wasn't all work and no play. And SGP was no shrinking violet. As he and the other UK expatriate students could not compete in ice hockey, American football or baseball, SGP, for one, participated in the drama club. And here in the OAC review for March 1913, he is mentioned for his role as the Reverend Spaulding in the farce The Private Secretary. Although war broke out in August 1914, SGP elected to complete his fourth year, which would be September 14 to August 15. As lectures were coming to an end in 1915, and with the Allies doing badly in Gallipoli and elsewhere, the students were suddenly advised that if they joined up immediately, they would be granted their degrees without sitting their final exams. I can't imagine that nowadays. He, along with most of the other students, as he recalled, quickly joined up. Mr. Perrin duly reported to the recruiting office and was assigned to the divisional ammunition column of the Canadian Field Artillery. After a few weeks' training, Gunner Perrin departed with the Canadian Expeditionary Force from Quebec to Liverpool, where Gunner Perrin was promoted along the way to Bombardier and then Sergeant. In the UK, the Canadian Divisional Artillery Column underwent a lot of training from their base at Folkestone. This was not just drill and musketry, but also artillery gun drills, for they were expected to be the reinforcements for any casualties on the gun line, but also how to handle horses and wagons that carted the artillery ammunition to the front lines. Clearly, Sergeant Perrin was going to be in his element. The image on the left is a typical ammunition dump. The divisional artillery column would collect bulk artillery ammunition from a railhead and take it forward in horse-drawn carts to the front line. They would dump it in close proximity to the gun positions of the division's artillery batteries. This work was often undertaken during the hours of darkness and under German artillery fire. The image on the right shows Second Lieutenant Perrin with Australian, British, South African officers in the UK prior to his departure for the front. The story of his commissioning illustrates his willingness to take a less obvious path to achieve the result he wants. Shortly after arrival in the UK with the Canadian Expeditionary Force and as a sergeant, the UK War Office issued an urgent call for officers due to heavy casualties sustained at the front in Europe and elsewhere. Sergeant Perrin put his name forward for consideration. However, his unit declined the request, for it needed its NCOs. Undeterred, Sergeant Perrin then applied for leave, which he was granted, and duly presented himself directly to the British War Office in London. Stating he was there to be interviewed to become an officer, he was indeed granted his request and commissioned as a second lieutenant into the British Royal Field Artillery, and once more, following 4 weeks' training, posted to an artillery ammunition column, this time for the 14th UK Division. Second Lieutenant Perrin Deneep early on, and he recorded his first ammunition convoy through the town. You can see the comments on the slide. His first exposure to the front line was a shock. On reaching it, he found a shell had exploded in a bunker, killing all the officers. He then found himself in charge of the 18-pounder gun battery that they had once commanded. Eventually, he was permanently transferred to a gun battery, and it was here he undertook an act of bravery that likely resulted in him being awarded a mention in dispatches, or MID. A gun team in horse-drawn limber got bogged in full view of enemy artillery, and using his Canadian experience, as he himself recalled, he organized the three horse drivers and their teams of horses and got them free and on their way. After a period of duty on the gun line, he was transferred to the artillery staff as a staff officer, where he was frequently required to visit the forward batteries near the front line in connection with his duties. He was also employed as an artillery intelligence officer and a liaison officer to the Royal Air Force. At the conclusion of the war and some 3 years' active service on the Western Front, Lieutenant Perrin was demobilised. For his services, he was awarded not only an MID, but also the French Croix de Guerre with Silver Star. The Croix de Guerre is awarded for a feat of bravery or distinguished service. Sadly, his citation cannot be located, so I can't show it to you. And according to the Dictionary of New Zealand Biography, he was also recommended for a military cross for his conduct during the Battle of the Somme. This note formally advises Lieutenant Perrin that he has been awarded an MID. The MID was awarded by Field Marshal Sir Douglas Haig, approved by the King, and the handwritten notification is signed by the Secretary of State for War, one Winston Churchill. SGP's employment following his demobilisation had a major impact on his eventual decision to come to New Zealand. In his first role in 1919, he was briefly at a Ministry of Agriculture and Fisheries research station in Kent, and then a MAF inspector. But the role that set him up for New Zealand was 4 years from March 1920 as a lecturer at the University of Bristol's Long Ashton Agricultural and Horticultural Research Station, LARS. I can't vouch for his state of mind or war weariness, but possibly the research track he took in the immediate aftermath of the Great War was a distraction or a tonic for his war experience, and certainly the trees and farmland at LARS would be far more pleasant than the Western Front or in 1924, SGP applied successfully for the newly created Chair of Agriculture at Victoria University, New Zealand. He and his wife, Violet, reached New Zealand in mid-1924, and unbeknownst to them, they arrived in the midst of a heated debate over the best location and setup for a North Island-based agricultural training institution. It seems that both Victoria and Auckland universities were vying for the privilege of the situation at Victoria that he was confronted with. Sir Geoffrey reported to have said afterwards, "Surely this was one of the most extraordinary schools of agriculture which ever accepted students, a school without a farm, livestock, laboratories or funding, jammed into a little room in the physics department, barely large enough to hold six students. This state of affairs would just not do." SGP then set about what would become one of his hallmarks, touring the country, assessing the situation and garnering consensus over the need for a single North Island Agricultural College, and preferably in a country setting where the said college could actually run a farm and associated facilities. And you can imagine the disappointment of coming from somewhere from Lars to Victoria University, expecting perhaps a similar facility, only be put in the corner of a physics laboratory. Luckily, he and Professor Radet agreed, and they established, persuaded the naysayers, so that in 1926, the New Zealand Agricultural College Act was passed, establishing an agricultural college on the Bachelor property just outside Palmerston North, with a further act in 1927, naming the institution the Massey Agricultural College. Nothing escaped Professor Perrin's observation and touch. From buildings and gardens to course prescriptions and staffing, there are a bunch of files in the archives, and all of these and other matters under his watch as principal that I've reviewed there, they are full of examples of both his vision and his incredible eye for detail, another of his hallmarks. You know, from the size of a lecture room and the placement of its windows through to letters thanking individual prospective students who showed an interest in horticulture and the other courses that he was establishing. One aspect of his vision, evident from the files and letters, was his strong desire that women be encouraged to attend the college. By coincidence, my aunt, my father-in-law, David Anion, and my wife's godfather, Gordon Collier, were students on SGP's diploma in horticulture courses, and Gordon's report is shown on screen. And that raises another aspect of SGP's view of the world and education. Diploma courses and short courses, which were designed to impart the essentials to farmers and also make it easier to attract them, or those who would be farmers, to attend courses in what we might today call research-led instruction, where problems of the day and their latest solutions could be discussed and taught, and where those venturing out to deliver the instruction could learn from farmers the problems they were grappling with, and in turn, this fed the research mechanism. Besides setting up teaching facilities and instructional farms, SGP led a committee to establish a national arboretum at Massey. He wrote to contacts and universities all through Europe, North and South America, South Africa, and parts of Asia, calling for plant specimens, seeds or cuttings to be sent to New Zealand. As you can read the file, you can see he has gathered New Zealand's subject matter experts, and they are quickly also turning their attention to developing horticultural courses and applications. So he's created a centre of excellence around the arboretum he also wants by gathering these experts in. The image to the right is a 1944 export certificate from Canada for some of the specimens. I'll not go into the detail of course development and increasing student numbers, or the extensive work undertaken to establish teaching and research facilities, including working farms, but in the background, war was looming for a second time in SGP's life. Sensing war was brewing once more, Professor Perrin enlisted in the Territorials, the New Zealand Territorials, in 1939, and created a squadron of the local territorial military unit, the Manawatu Mounted Rifles, no doubt because of the horse connection, with members of his squadron seen here in front of what is now the SGP building. Many of the troops in Perrin's light horse were students and staff. Until then, he had focused on developing Massey and not maintained any military links. Commissioned as a lieutenant, he moved quickly up to captain, then major. By September 1940, he was promoted to command the entire MMR, in the rank of lieutenant colonel, which is the usual rank of a commanding officer, and well above what he'd experienced in the First World War. By then, Massey was finding it tough. Student numbers were falling rapidly, as low as 48 new enrolments from generally around 200 in 1942, as students left for the war or did not enroll at all in order to enlist, or they were conscripted for service overseas with the New Zealand Expeditionary Force. By July 1941, he'd been appointed to command the 2nd Brigade, located around Palmerston North, in the rank of colonel. He eventually commanded the entire 4th Division in the rank of Brigadier General. Until that point, he was able to juggle his military and Massey principal duties on a shared basis, but brigade command and then divisional command required a full-time commitment With low student numbers, Massey's board granted him leave to undertake his military duties. Shortly after this, Japan entered the war, heightening the perceived threat to New Zealand and hastening the formation of a home guard. This map on the right shows the boundaries of Perrin's command of 2 Brigade, the lower half of the South Island, and this is going to map very nicely, almost exactly, to his regional command when he becomes a civil defence regional commissioner later on. Colonel Perrin already knew the ground well because of his extensive visits to farms and farm-related activities in the wider region. The photo shows Colonel Perrin and some of his brigade headquarters staff officers during a training exercise. In the event of a Japanese landing somewhere in the lower North Island, Colonel Perrin, supported by his staff officers, was expected to maneuver the entire brigade, infantry, artillery, armoured vehicles, logistics, etc., towards the invasion landing site and either repel it or perhaps maintain a guerrilla-type resistance from the bush or the hills. His headquarters, with him providing direction and leadership as the commander, and his staff would be responsible for deploying and fighting the brigade. However, he and his staff officers were largely ignorant of modern-day warfare. They would have a steep learning curve. It was at hand, though, from an unexpected direction, and again, Colonel Perrin was instrumental in a result that benefited the wider army, his formation 2 Brigade, and the Massey Agricultural College. The army had determined that a military staff college be established to train all staff officers destined for the 3rd New Zealand Division overseas or for the 4th Home Guard Division in New Zealand, including Perrin. Although Wairua was initially determined as the location, the staff college commandant-elect, Colonel Hawkins, determined that the location was most unsuitable, and I agree. And to cut a long story short, Perrin facilitated the staff college being established within the Massey campus. Teaching facilities, a refectory, kitchen and dining, and some accommodation already existed. It was the ideal solution. Army staff college students filled the mostly empty university accommodation, and the university received income from the army that replaced lost student fees. The army staff courses ran between 2 and 15 weeks and catered for senior officers, staff officers, and tactical courses for unit commanders. Each course had about 50 students at a time, and Colonel Perrin was an early student himself. For as a commander, he had much to learn and wanted to learn, and also needed to know what his staff officers were being taught. Another trait was for him to attend courses to upskill himself. And this aerial photograph shows the foundations of McCarty Hall on the bottom left, but the small huts were accommodation for the army students until McCarty was built. Staff were accommodated separately at Casher Birch House in Palmerston North. By early 1944, the need for a staff college and the threat of a Japanese invasion had passed. So the facilities were handed back, and in many cases across, to Massey. Some 500 military students had passed through the staff college, helping to keep the institution alive. Brigadier Perrin relinquished command of the 4th Division, which he had had temporary command of since November 1942, and focused once more on Massey itself, including how to incorporate the increasing numbers of returned servicemen and women into the college. And this image shows McCarty Hall and the refectory back in the day, Second World War, and you can see on the left-hand side how they look today. And I note the significant refurbishment that the refectory has had recently. I just want to head on just discuss research at Massey. SGP also drove a significant research component within the college. This snapshot from 1949 gives an idea of the scope. I've highlighted the two research activities SGP himself was involved in, along with Professor Radet. So he certainly walked the talk. Research was first reported in Professor Perrin's 1928 annual report to the board. So it was established very early on. Under SGP's direction, Massey wooed allied areas, including forestry. And here we see him during a forestry conference Conferences brought together all interested parties and built Massey's reputation as a centre of excellence. And yet, Professor Perrin still saw shortages in numbers being attracted to agriculture as a significant issue, as noted in this press article, recording his opening address at the Royal Agricultural Society of New Zealand annual conference held at Massey in 1952. In his retirement, even in his retirement from Massey, he was still on message with the overall lack of investment in agricultural research within New Zealand. His argument was that money invested in research and in extension work in the field was more than paid back by improvements in productivity and practice on farm. The following year, he received a knighthood for services to agriculture. In 1961, so after having retired from Massey, the bill before Parliament introduced by the new Minister of Civil Defence, F.L. Gotts, established the regional basis for civil defence within New Zealand and defined operational administrative functions, including regional commissioners, three of them, Northern, Central and Southern. In 1960, Professor Perrin was appointed Regional Commissioner of the Central Region, whose ground mapped exactly over his military command from 1941 and 42. Regional commanders were given authority to declare local or regional emergencies, and every local authority was required to prepare a local civil defence plan acceptable to the Regional Commissioner. The Civil Defence Act December 1962 designated armed attack and natural disasters as the two main types of hazard. SGP and the other two regional commissioners, however, considered that people had become accustomed to earthquakes and they felt they could be dealt with off the cuff. Within the ministry, the emphasis was also very much on the nuclear threat, and this is what the commissioners focused on initially in the early 1960s. The minister himself, though, viewed the nuclear threat as hypothetical only. The reason for the focus on the nuclear threat was the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis, 60 years ago, and even today we're talking about nuclear threats around, out of Ukraine or Russia and North Korea. As his personal piece of research, SGP, and linking his agricultural knowledge, SGP produced a draft version of what was called radioactive fallout on the farm, which was designed to provide guidance to farmers in the event of a nuclear strike. In the end, though, the project was quietly shelved, especially as the minister came out publicly against a nuclear threat. SGP did have an immediate impact, though, on civil defence, even if his nuclear handbook did not. He very quickly developed a three-day short course, another of these short courses, for regional and town representatives involved in civil defence. Indeed, he toured his region extensively, again, briefing councils and getting civil defence groups established. His version of the Massey Diploma courses in Staff College, I guess, focused on civil defence essentials and an understanding of how the different roles collaborated to achieve the outcome. He also produced guidance on how regions and districts could plan and conduct civil defence exercises as a means to develop their capability to respond in a collective and timely manner. And I dare say these have all been converted from his brigade exercise papers from 1941 and 1942. Here, a report on one of his exercises held in Wairoa, and we note the emphasis on an armed attack on New Zealand rather than natural disaster. Anyway, the district Council's civil defence files that I've reviewed are very slim for the years prior to SGP's appointment as a regional commissioner for the central region. And then in all districts, the files explode with correspondence. SGP to visit and brief council, the setup of a civil defence local committee and structure, attendance on a civil defence course or conference at Massey, how to set up an exercise, debriefing an exercise. He obviously had a significant impact. He was everywhere and encouraging, as he had been in the lead-up and to the formation of Massey. It is remarkable that so little emphasis has been given to this significant service following his time at Massey. He handed over the central region in December 1964, job done. His region was in a good shape and others were emulating his practices. December 1964 may have marked his proper retirement. However, he remained active right up until his death, particularly promoting the Perrondale sheep breed, which he pioneered. This 1972 handwritten letter from SGP at age 80 provides significant guidance to an Oamaru farmer who sought his advice on the Perrondale sheep breed and shows his unstinting willingness to help others, and even in his old age and in retirement. New Haven Perrondales still has copies of this inspirational letter online, and they note that their thriving business was established in 1972, no doubt based on SGP's generous funds. He died on the 19th of July, 1980, at age 87, and fittingly, his ashes were interred within the veterans section of the Kelvin Grove Cemetery in Palmerston North. During his long and distinguished academic and military career, he was awarded a number of orders and medals, as you can see, that attest to his courage, his dedication, and his service. He's a significant legacy. Massey University itself is probably his number one legacy, a flourishing academic institution, research-focused, with tremendous grounds and significant tree and plant areas. The SGP building shown here is named after him, as are the Perrondale breed of sheep, that Romney and Cheviot cross that he championed. He earned significant mana or authority based on his war and his academic service, and it was that mana that lent so much authority when it was able to allow him to pull together the regional civil defence organisation that he was able to together. He showed physical courage under fire, courage of his conviction, and he also, with the vision that he had, he also displayed great drive to get there. Just in conclusion, his work and life were significant. In my view, many aspects of it overlapped, not just even geographically or the way that he went about things. I note from the Perrin code crest his the motto, danger shall strike me unappalled. And in many ways, he lived up to that. Not that he necessarily knew of it, but he certainly lived up to it, not just physical danger like wartime, but those risks associated in trying to get a new organization off the ground or head off into the research area. He confronted and overcame all of those and justly deserves all the accolades that he's got. But it does strike me as a little bit odd that there's not a book written about the man, because he certainly deserves one. Nō reira, tēnā koutou katoa. Thank you.